Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you, as usual. A little bit of lighthearted fare for you as we head into the weekend, but with some serious news items to throw in there as well. But we start more on the lighthearted side. Jimmy Fallon, of course, is the new host of The Tonight Show. He's been on the job for a little over a month, and he certainly plays to a younger audience. And in a recent skit this week, Jimmy Fallon portrayed Vladimir Putin, and another cast member from The Tonight Show portrayed President Obama. And while the skit went on for a number of minutes, two different parts of this not only dinged Obamacare, but also the president's handling of the situation in the Ukraine. Here's how that played out.
Don't you see what you're doing, though? You're forcing people to accept something that the majority of them don't even want.
Yes, in Russia we have a word for this, Obamacare.
Ouch. 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 Now that hurt.
Yeah, those Obamacare cover burns.
Ha, ha, ha. Ha, ha, very funny. And no. Vlad, just to recap our call, no progress was made here, right?
None at all.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So, Jim, Jay Leno was merciless in the monologues. Jimmy Kimmel has done a ton of different bits on how horrific Obamacare is, and now Jimmy Fallon's getting in on the act. So even in the liberal world of pop culture, people know this is a disaster.
First of all, it's a pretty darn good sketch, and people always talk about how Saturday Night Live has declined. Jimmy Fallon, a former Saturday Night Live cast member who's now hosting The Tonight Show, you know, kind of feels like he's hitting the crisis. You can hear the reaction to that audience. By making the sketch about Ukraine and Putin, and for Putin to bring up Obamacare, you know, kind of using it to thank. And then the follow-on, does it cover burns? Anytime you can put one punchline on top of another, it works very well. Way back when in, like, it must have been Christmas 2009, Jimmy Fallon had what I thought was going to be one of the jokes that was really going to stick to Obama. And if I remember it, I haven't seen other people citing it as often, but it talked about, Greg, I assume you heard that Michelle Obama isn't really filled with Christmas spirit much this year. Have you heard that?
I have not. What's going on?
Well, it turns out that every year President Obama promises her a big present and then doesn't deliver. And I thought that would be what would stuck to Obama and what people would laugh about. The idea that he's this big talker, big promises, always telling you how great something's going to be, and then it turns out not be nearly as good. That's kind of what we've got in, you know, the theme that's in this one. But also I think when you tack on kind of that closing joke of, so just to review, nothing got done here. The joke about Obama is now that he's thoroughly ineffective. For all of his pretty words and pretty speeches, things don't get better, and that he actually is, you know, during much of that sketch, Putin gets all the good lines, and Putin is, you know, the sketch is funny, but there's kind of this truth to it of Putin's, you know, in the command chair, so to speak, and calling the shots, and, you know, Obama's kind of hapless and trying to deal with it. And that's a good martini.
Yeah, that is the good martini. All right, on to Obamacare now in the bad martini, and part of it's Obamacare, but it's also a reminder that at one time Nancy Pelosi was not only two heartbeats away from the presidency, but one of the hearts in between, not all that strong at the time. So it was an even more dangerous situation since it was Dick Cheney who was not in great health as vice president. But at her weekly briefing, as now the House Minority Leader, thankfully she's not the Speaker anymore, she got a pretty simple question, which I assume was in response to the fact that in a competitive special House race down in Florida, Obamacare was a major issue and it worked against the Democratic candidate. So with many more congressional elections coming up, here was the question and Pelosi's answer.
Could I just ask, in the current environment in a swing district, is Obamacare a winner or a loser politically?
Well, you have to ask the member, but I believe that it's a winner. And by the way, it's called the Affordable Care Act. It's called the Affordable Care Act. I know you didn't intend any compliment or derogatory, but it's called the Affordable Care Act. And the Affordable Care Act, when people know what it is and see what it means to them.
Yeah, keep pushing the affordable line. That's really going to make people keep looking at their premium numbers. Jim, you and I both voted for a president who wasn't the greatest when it came to public speaking, but Nancy Pelosi's in a whole different world, it seems like.
Yeah, and you keep marveling at why Democrats have her leading them in the House. She must know where a lot of bodies are buried because she's not good. You know, she's really kind of insisting, I'm calling it affordable, so it has to be affordable, and it doesn't really work that way. two other kind of notes on the Obamacare front. The really big one that I just put up on Campaign Spot a little while back. Longtime listeners will recognize the name Ezekiel Emanuel. He's the brother of Rahm Emanuel, a doctor, a guy who's been, you know, have a big hand in setting up healthcare policy for a long time. Some people call him the architect of Obamacare. And he's in an interview with the New York Times today, which basically he says he expects the law to produce an unadvertised but fundamental shift where most working Americans get their health insurance, specifically a sharp drop in the number of employers who offer coverage to their workers. It'll be a matter of a few big employers, blue chip companies, and then it's going to be the norm. So here he is saying Obamacare, I'm sorry, the Affordable Care Act, let Nancy Pelosi get mad at me, is going to end or drastically reduce employer-based insurance. Greg, do you remember them mentioning that when they were talking this up? This is precisely the opposite of what they were saying. That, you know, that if you like your plan, you can keep your plan. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. And, you know, most people, like, there are certain advantages to employer-based plans. Yeah, you don't get to pick much of the plans yourself, or you end up with a limited thing. But you know what? You don't get to pick your insurance company. But you know what? Your employer takes care of it. And usually your employer kicks in a certain amount of money to kind of help defray the costs. Now, there are some like Avik Roy and other folks. I remember McCain making this push. There's an argument to be made for detaching insurance from your job and from your employer. But that's very much not what Obama was pushing for in this, and it certainly wasn't how he sold it. Most people who have their insurance through their employer like it that way. Health insurance is one of those topics people don't want to think about. If Obama had said in 2008, I am going to set up a reform that will end employer-based care, would he have been elected? Right? I mean, he went after McCain for this. He, you know, because McCain wanted to eliminate the tax deduction that employers get for providing insurance to their employees, because he wanted it to be more individual focused and, you know, more portable from employer to employer. You thought the if you like your plan, you can keep it, and the cancellation of plans was a big deal last year. Imagine what happens when employers start saying, you know, we're just going to pay the fine, which is what conservatives have been saying from the beginning was going to happen under this. So here you have one of the architects saying, hey, actually, this law is going to have a really huge impact that we never really talked about before and that some people might not like. But hey, it's passed. Nothing you can do about it. And meanwhile, Nancy Pelosi is insisting that the name has to be the right way. What's actually going on in people's lives is like light years removed from the discussion in Washington. Election Day 2014 just can't get here soon enough, as far as I'm concerned.
On to Martini number three now. This is a double shot. This goes back to the ongoing breathless media coverage of what in the world happened to Malaysia Airlines flight MH370. You've got Chuck Todd now in a Twitter war with one of the executive producers over at CNN, Situation Room producer Vaughn Sterling. Chuck Todd taking to Twitter saying, another day of breaking news based on finding nothing, or in other words, not breaking news. Then he goes on to say, I know it may look like I'm casting stones while potentially living in a glass house, but the mistakes of one news organization hurts all of us. And then he says, then it becomes the media is abusing breaking news. No, it's not the media in general. So CNN's Situation Room producer then sent out a bunch of tweets showing MSNBC's breaking news lower third coverage of all this stuff happening with the investigation into the flight. But as bad as that back and forth is, Jim, CNN headline news takes the cake because they're not content with aviation experts and speculative terrorism theories. No, they're going the psychic route. Here is the substitute host for Dr. Drew talking to a psychic named Lisa Williams.
Your theory here is that this plane landed somewhere, some of the passengers are still alive, that the co-pilot was involved. I'm going to start first and foremost with there are people at home right now that are going to shake their head at that are going to be disappointed that you would take that leap when you don't have hard concrete evidence. What would you say to those people?
Well, naturally, I don't actually have hard concrete evidence, and I think any psychic who has hard concrete evidence can't do their job correctly because they get misinformed, they get interpreted, and they'll just work on what they know. So I tend to work off what I don't know.
I tend to work off what I don't know. Apparently, she's got a bright, bright future in cable TV, Jim.
Greg, if you're a psychic who has hard concrete evidence, are you really a psychic anymore? Isn't that knowledge? Isn't that, you know, at that point, we're out of the supernatural. We're in the just plain old natural at that point. So, but I also love the news anchor saying, don't you think people at home are shaking your head for you going on television and saying this? How about shaking their head at the people who booked you? Or the host who's asking questions of you. Like, hey, look, you invited me, okay? You know, I'm open about being a psychic, okay? You're the ones who are saying, hey, viewers of Headline News, pay attention to what this person has to say. You talk about the idea of the plane being sucked into a black hole. We're kind of in this reality-bending black hole among itself when, you know, because you saw there was a little bit of righteous indignation from that psychic to the questioning of the host there. So that's that angle. Then moving on to Chuck Todd versus CNN. You may recall back when the George Zimmerman trial was going on.
Sure.
It preempted Daily Rundown most of the time. Chuck Todd, they'd cut to Chuck Todd, who would then say, they're about to get underway down in Florida. Let's take you down there. And like day by day, you could just kind of sense the irritation of Chuck Todd. You know, one, because he's not getting to do his regular show, but two, because his regular show deals with all kinds of national news, but a lot of politics news. And in disclosure, I've been on it and generally think pretty well of Chuck Todd. I want to salute a guy for kind of being critical of his own profession. And, you know, having said that, I mean, MSNBC, have they covered the plane a lot? Sure. I mean, not as much as, say, Chris Christie closing a bridge. While we're at it, I mean, look. You know, MSNBC goes crazy over the bridge story. CNN goes crazy over the plane story. Fox News, which we all like, we all love. You may remember the Anna Nicole Smith death, in which they had all kinds of, you know, B-roll footage of her rolling around and doing Anna Nicole Smith stuff. I distinctly remember, Greg, this is the three martini lunch you're going to want to save on your iTunes. So I remember it was Thanksgiving. I got home like the Wednesday night before Thanksgiving, turn on Fox News, and my distinguished boss, who I respect a great deal, Rich Lowry, is sitting in for Hannity on Hannity and Combs. And my poor boss, who I respect so much, had to moderate a panel discussion on the Anna Nicole Smith death investigation. I looked and I was like emailing people saying, are you watching this? Are you watching, you know. So cable news will do this to everybody sooner or later. They will find some story that they will cover, you know, because it gets ratings. I guess the idea is that people who don't generally watch cable news, people who don't care about politics, people who don't care about economics, don't care about world affairs, something happens and then they really, really care. Celebrity deaths or something like that. In this case, it's this great mystery story of what the hell happened to that plane. And the problem is that in the past 2 weeks or so, we haven't gotten that much more new information. The only thing, revelations we've had since then is basically how much you don't ever want to have to depend on the Malaysian government to save you. Because apparently, they get everything wrong at the beginning. They have the entire world's navy searching in the wrong ocean for times like that. There are all kinds of powers in this neighborhood. India, Pakistan, China, Thailand, Indonesia, who all are kind of... tents, and so they have tons of air radar systems and stuff like that. But nobody's sharing information because of all these tensions, which is kind of maddening. Does it deserve coverage? Sure. Probably not the round-the-clock coverage. It's almost like CNN, when you see the cry on breaking news under information that's nothing new, breaking news, still no sign of this plane. It's like they're willing news to happen. You're like, if we just try, use the force, there'll be some revelation, it'll happen. And obviously it doesn't. I think we're all feeling for the families. We're all thinking, God, how horrible would it be? You love someone and they just disappear one day and you don't know what happened to them. And something seemingly impossible has happened. And, a plane crash is tragic enough, but because they haven't found any wreckage, maybe the plane is still landed somewhere. But if that happened, if it was a hijacking, there's no hostage to me, all that kind of stuff going through your heads. And at some point, we're going to have to stop. We can't do 24/7 coverage of this missing plane into perpetuity. But if we kind of have a sense of once we do, well, then we're giving up on it. And I have this feeling that there's also this sense of people don't want to pull their eyes away. They don't want to move on to other news topics because if they do, it's kind of an acknowledgement, well, we're never going to know. And, it's kind of frightening to live in a world where jet planes full of passengers going from, not through Antarctica or something like that, going through a fairly heavily traveled corner of the world, just suddenly disappears one moment and nobody ever sees it again. Anyway, we've talked about this now two straight Friday pre-martini lunches, Greg, and I hope to not be talking about it for too many Fridays more.
Indeed. Jim, have a good weekend. Talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.